Welcome to Bagel Tech Big, the weekend show from the Bagel Tech Network. Slick as ever and ready to go. We've only 15 minutes late, but England beat the Welsh, so it can't be all bad. And apparently QPR won as well, but who cares? We're here for a chat about the week's technology, and as usual, I am joined by a fantastic bunch of people. Top left, I've got with a black blob over his face for some reason.
I'm in the witness protection program, apparently. There I am.
It was the crap screen, but it's gone now. Eric Lanigan from...
Hey, guys.
How you doing, mate?
I'm good. How are you?
Such a long day for you. You were up manfully at 5 a.m. this morning doing the Bagel
Tech
show.
Yeah. And here I am back again.
Fantastically, after a mild nap, he's here again. So well done, pal.
Revitalized, ready to talk about tech news.
Yeah, I don't do it every week, but I do get up periodically early for the Computer America show because I'm supposed to be the digital photography expert on that. But if it was every Friday, I think I'd die. Next to Eric is Sarah, our resident coder and the lady who keeps our servers up and running. How you doing, missus?
Not feeling too great.
Yeah, she's brought her cold on. So if there's anything
Sorry, guys, if you guys get it, then you know it's me.
Yes. And below her, we've got Kyle Swagger, the stalwart, who's been with me all day. On the photo show and the Mac show, and he's done the media show as well as, but that wasn't quite on time.
But no, it was not on time at all, yeah.
Not at all. No. How's it going, mate? You wide awake,
yeah,
early morning Philippines?
Oh, yeah, it's good. Fourth cup of coffee, woohoo! I'm good, yeah. Thank
you. And finally, but by no means least, Troy King, our droid man and the angriest man in tech. How you doing, pal?
I'm angry, Ewan.
Jolly good. Blasted. And wearing a tweed jacket this evening.
I am.
Have you got patches over the elbows, dude?
No, I'm not that good yet.
Well, it's not a proper tweed jacket then. It doesn't count.
So. Looks like he just came from the DMV.
That's vehicles. I was thinking about like the police or something. Court appearance.
No, I'm saying he's working at the DMV.
All right, okay.
Well, let's just say the authorities have been digging in my backyard, but everything's alleged so far.
They're not...
That's more information we needed, I think.
I ran a course once for Fred West's jailers, and they said he was a really nice bloke. He only killed about 40 people over the space of 20 years. Never mind, though. Moving on, the week in technology news. What's happened? British hacker has admit... we'll start again. What's happened? A British hacker has admitted to stealing virtual poker chips from a Facebook game, and apparently it was rather easy. America's biggest problem is now death by GPS, according to their DMV. And also, there has been a huge amount of kerfuffle over Apple rejecting the Sony Reader application from the iPhone. Winged cars are coming to the UK, and a fantastic controller for the Xbox 360 came out, the N Control Avenger. And I want one just based on the picture, because it was absolutely stunning. Daily application.
Get it. Let me know how to use it.
Oh, it looked fantastic, man. It means instead of having to press the X and the Y button, you can actually just flick your fingers further forwards. It looks fantastic. It looks really kind of a bit of steampunk meets high tech. It was beautiful. It's $40, so that means it's going to be £40 when he gets over here. And I don't know if it's that good, but we'll have to wait and see. And finally, Russia launched a satellite, and within an hour of it hitting space, they'd lost it. So if you're under the trajectory of that one, watch out for when it lands, because it's going to be coming down on you. Right, what do we fancy having a little shufty over? Because it's been 7 airlines now offering free in-flight Facebook. I thought that was a really interesting one, because why would you sit and interact with someone on a flight who was probably like 4 or 5 seats away from you? Why wouldn't you get up and go and talk to them?
You got to keep the aisles clear for drink service.
Okay, based on the fact we've all got alcohol tonight, that's a good point. A very good point, Troy. Well done, mate. Top of the class. Do you really want that?
It goes over the full internet, doesn't it? Or are they restricting it just to that flight cabin?
No, they're saying that actually you've got interaction with the flight cabin. So you'll know who's on the flight with you, and you can interact directly with them.
But not over the internet.
I'm not sure whether you get general internet connection as well as. So, I mean, if you're talking about cheating and joining the Mile High Club, if your wife's watching your Facebook profile, that could be a problem. Absolutely. But why would you want interaction with people who are on your flight without just physically going to talk to them?
To know if they're a terrorist or not.
Someone tweets out, I'm the crutch bomber.
At least the meetup would be cheap.
It would. I can't see any benefit to this other than the fact that there's going to be some stories soon where people have done things that are hugely inappropriate.
Well, that's probably what it's going to be. It's going to be, you know, maybe we're more calm or we're more confident when it's in a virtual environment. God only knows that when you see each other, oh, yeah, that's you, and you get off the plane, and then you'll never speak to each other again.
God. Yes, no, that wouldn't be very good, would it? Not at all.
Yeah.
I know on Virgin America here, they have their in-flight, the TV/computer in front of you with the controller and everything is all, everything is wired so that you can send text messages to people around the plane. I guess it's just for people who, you know, you get on there with friends, but you have to be spread out around the plane. Other than that, I don't know.
Does the agent shoot you if you say the word bomb in your tweet?
Yeah, they're monitoring you probably.
Exactly.
It caused the plane to instantly land at the nearest airport.
You can imagine the chat room in the top right corner, instead of a moderator, there's just a guy that says TSA agent or something.
Air Marshal.
MI6.
I think this is all about Zuckerberg just trying to control the airspace.
Well, no, there's been a whole load of issues over privacy this week because, I mean, the Daily application, their privacy laws got very badly reported across the net. I mean, Stephen Fry tweeted out that he'd read it and now no longer downloaded the iPad as the Daily application as a result. You'd also got a dating site stealing 250,000 people's single profiles and populated their database with it, which I thought was actually quite good. I thought that showed initiative. I like that one. I mean, the kind of terms of service stuff that's coming out from people that want you to sign up, you know, it's kind of standard practice now. Even if you buy something off the internet, there's very few sites actually give you the option to just buy it based on a single email. They want your name, your address, they want your mother's maiden name, they want a whole load of details to get you to come into their walled garden, excuse the use of the phrase again perhaps. But
yeah, it's valuable data.
It's valuable, it's really valuable data, exactly. But you know, how much option they give you to tick it and say I don't want to be part of this is a completely different issue. Now if you look at the daily application was very all consuming. I thought it was very badly worded. I didn't feel totally threatened. But I mean, are we really bothered about those? You know, would you sign up to the Daily given the privacy terms that you saw there?
Oh, with the no. Jeez, I don't know. I was kind of excited about the Daily at first, and then I watched it on. I guess it was Fox News, because you know Sky News and Fox News are the only one that covered it. Gee, I wonder why. And it's one of these things where they got the pricing right. I'm happy with the pricing, but I feel that 99 cents very much pales compared to how much of our soul we're actually giving in the end.
To the Dark Lord that is Rupert Murdoch.
Exactly.
Oh, God. I'm glad no one listens to this show because we'd be sued rotten.
Thank you, Ian.
Yeah, it's all right.
You're better than me.
No, I mean, the thing is, it's all about collecting the data, isn't it? I mean, if you look at... I went for a refund shop this weekend, and they said, can we have your postcode? No. Can we have your address? No. Well, we can't give you a refund without a postcode and address. Well, the item's faulty. Yeah, but we can't give you a refund without your postcode and address. I think you'll find trading standards will say something else. Yeah. I mean, it's all about gathering the data, isn't it? It's all about getting the information of the person and then what you do with that information. You look at Zuckerberg. Zuckerberg's been absolutely vilified with the privacy settings thing over Facebook. But actually, everyone's doing it. Everyone is screwing with people and giving them such a hard time and then selling their data on. Yeah, absolutely. I mean, is the? I mean, I would say that the Daily was not atypical of the current climate in terms of privacy. Yes, no.
Yes and no.
Oh, go on. Mm. Qualify that then, mate.
I can't. I was just being a smartass.
Is privacy an issue to us on that kind of terms of service agreement?
Now, privacy is important to me, honestly. I'm getting sick and tired of these long, I have to, they know damn good and well none of us are going to read 276 pages of about how this affects me. We just want the service, we just want it there. And they're betting on that, actually. We're just getting to a time now where it's like, okay, fine. If I'm living online, then fine. My privacy's out the window. But when it comes to these kind of things for signing up with a service that I'm paying for, and it's affecting me that directly, I don't know. I'm not really for that. You know, I'm really not. I don't think you need to know that much about. I'm just paying for your stupid 99 cents a week service.
The interesting thing about this, though, is that it's effectively becoming counterproductive. So what they're actually trying to do with the information, if it's just going to hack you off, then it's going against what they're trying to achieve. So maybe eventually they'll actually work that out and start being a bit more friendly about whether you actually want to receive the latest, you know, mailing from such and X ABC company or whatever, and be a bit smarter about it.
You and I've been trying to find the text of what you're talking about. What are some of the lines of the privacy policy that have you going?
It tends to be quite all-consuming. It's just it's basically saying, you know, we're going to gather the following data from you and we're going to use it however much we want to. It really is written that badly. A lot of people have suggested that I've been overstating that, but it's just www.thedaily.com/privacy. So try that one out. But there's phrases in there that are fairly standardized, if you like. You know, that there wasn't anything in there that really had me running scared. But it basically said, you know, there's data that we're going to gather from you, and there's things that we're going to do with it. And we've got third parties that support the service, advertisers, allowing users to share content, tracking aggregate site usage statistics and also technologies and similar information. We do not control these third-party technologies and their uses governed by the privacy policies of the third parties and not us. For further information about third-party networks, then please see www.aboutads.info, which I would think is probably fairly poor in terms of an explanation. They're talking about sharing information with Flash Technologies and Adobe's website. Well,
that's interesting.
Yeah. Users can manage the use of Flash technologies, including cookies and Flash management tools available at Adobe's website. Please note that by blocking any or all of the cookies that are available, you may not have access to certain features or personalizations that are available through the service. So if you block us...
Does it say website, though? I guess because, yeah, what seems strange about that is obviously there's no Flash on the iPad, but I guess they're talking about their probably just ads on their website, I'm guessing.
Well, that's exactly it. I mean, there's interesting as well with the application that gives you access to Flash sites on the iPad. It'd be interesting whether that changes your viewing experience. But it says that there's cookies in there that are being pushed through, and they're going to look at where you are. They're going to look at your location. They're going to look at the services that you've got. They're going to look at the type of browsing that you do, and the ads that are going to be served up are going to be pertinent to that. Well, that's no different than you ever get in a standard browser. But
right.
you just kind of look at an application that you're paying money for and think, well, now hang on a second. You know, I didn't mind it so much when I was accessing the free web and yeah, okay, I'm accessing free information and there's things there that I want to look at and there's a price to pay for that, which is that they're going to know where I've been and the adverts have to fit what I'm doing. But when you've paid for an application, that really kind of, that's where the game changes. You know, it's from one side to the other. Sorry,
that's what
Sarah.
I was saying about. Sorry.
Go ahead, Sarah.
I was just going to say that's what I was saying about. You know, hopefully, that one day they'll work out actually this is counterproductive, and that they're losing more business because of people are getting hacked off than they're actually getting from it. I mean, we all know that generally the rate of getting business through direct marketing is very low anyway. So the benefit must be marginal anyway.
Yeah, I mean, there's a lot of comments in the stat room. According to you and yours on Radio 4, the new trading standards in the UK stat, if terms and conditions are unreasonable, then they're void. That would be part of unfair contracts, I would have suggested, Paul, perhaps. And also, there is a real suggestion that you know, that kind of stuff could be unreasonable. But the problem that you've got is once you've signed up for it, if you then choose to not like it, your ability to rectify that situation is extremely difficult. You know, the process through the courts is tiresome and an awful lot of struggle.
Do we know whether that new law applies to... Because normally what companies do with this, you probably know this, Ewan, is that they'll put a clause in there that says if any of the terms are found to be invalid, the rest of the contract shall remain valid. Do we know whether that is still legal?
No, it's... Aye.
Sorry.
Phone call. No, the if you look at UCTA says basically that unfair contract terms shall be invalid, but it doesn't. UCTA doesn't actually render the entire contract invalid. But if you've got a term within it that's invalid, you've got a real hard time proving that the rest of it's got some stature to it.
That's why companies put that particular clause in there, though, isn't it?
Yeah.
So the whole thing can't be thrown out for one term.
But that constitutes an unfair contract term in itself. Because a contract is by the whole provision of service. It's not by partial provision of service, because anything that's partially provided can't then be the full delivery of the contract. So, you know, unfair contract terms is about completion of the original promise, whether it, you know, the consideration that was issued and the offer and acceptance. And if you don't complete the full offer and acceptance, then I can't see how you've got a valid contract term anyway.
I know that my lawyer has always told me that when you're signing a contract with somebody, if there's anything wrong with the contract, the courts will be more harsh towards the person who wrote the contract and more lenient towards the person who, you know, the client or customer. So I think that when it comes to parts of the contract being void, if there's a lot of hassle with it, the court's going to say, listen, you wrote this contract and a lot of it is garbage, so you're going to have to let this person out of it.
There are things that you can expect of people which are reasonable and things which are unreasonable, which is what Paul's saying in the chat room. If you've got an unreasonable term, then it constitutes something that's unfair. So if you're saying, look, you know, we're not going to give you what we want to give you unless you give us things like your personal medical history, for example. Now, in signing up for that, that's very difficult to start suggesting that it was a fair contract term, because personal medical history has absolutely nothing to do with the daily iPad app. Now, I'm not suggesting that they do suggest that. They don't want your medical history. But that would be... There's no connotation there. But if you're talking about name, address, contact details, and what they then do with them, it's very difficult to argue that that's unfair.
99 cents and a blood sample.
And I want your first... I want your firstborn child as well.
You know, this is all a ploy to save MySpace.
You reckon?
I just don't know it yet. Yeah. Oh, yeah, yeah. What happens is probably term and condition. 17,776 in term conditions says that News Corp gives you or has the right to use your likeness and create you a MySpace page so that it won't go under.
So you can get their numbers out. Yeah, okay.
That's right.
Well, they're selling even MySpace as well, aren't they?
Yeah, yeah. I'll give them a dollar.
It's not.
Oh, what do you know? That's the price of the daily. Oh, sorry.
No, it's you buy a copy of the daily, you get a free MySpace social network.
Yeah, that's right.
Unfortunately, it's first come, first serve.
Yeah, they're just selling off their ownership of MySpace 99 cent shares.
The other thing that came up this week, and I thought this would be a really interesting discussion, because we talked a little bit about Honeycomb last week and whether it would be the schism that would separate. Google have actually said that Honeycomb will never go on smartphones. Now, I mean, Troy knew he was never going to get it anyway because he's with Motorola. But the Honeycomb system is definitely going to go down the tablet side, and the Gingerbread is definitely going down the smartphone side. Is that a good or a bad business move? Because
I think it's terrible.
Yeah, I mean, it's fractured enough as it is, but
I know. I mean, you know, what's the? You've got, they're similar enough that unless they're going to completely diverge and effectively become two completely different products, you know, in terms of maintenance, that's just making Android even more fractured than it already is.
Yeah, for consumers, I think it's terrible because it's already hard enough to see, you know, all these phones. You go into a store, you go in to buy the latest, greatest Android phone, and it's running an old version of the operating system. I think that's one area where Apple is, you know, thumbing their nose at them. Ha ha, we've got a clear versioning system, and it's the same version on all our products. And for, I guess, the next year or so, at least, we're going to be seeing 3.0 on tablets. And then in consumers' minds, it'll be like, well, what, the phone operating system is older, but wait, version 2.6 is newer than 3.2's, and it looks like it. So what does that mean? It's really confusing.
Yeah.
It is really confusing.
Troy, you were going to say something there.
I was just going to say that this isn't surprising for tablets because the reason is the user interface. They wanted to redesign the user interface to have on-screen widgets and all this extra cool stuff, which is wonderful. But the fact that, I think Eric just made a fantastic point, is that, 2.6 for the smartphone will be newer than 3.0, and it's going to really just cause a huge divide. What applications are going to be tablet only? Which applications are going to be phone only? And I don't know what Google's thinking. They're completely round the bend on this one, but sadly.
The thing is with it, I don't understand why they can't have one code base, and when the OS is deployed, it knows what the device is, so therefore it can do what it needs to do according to what the device is. It's not rocket science to do that. It's unusual for Google to make this. There must be more to it than we currently know.
I mean,
there is. I mean, I agree with that, sir. I think, you know, you got 3.0 honeycomb, and who knows, 4.0 is going to be graham cracker. I mean, it's just really, really, really confusing. I seen this week about the Motorola Click also, that I think it was the X something. It's a little bit newer version, I think, the one. Yeah, that's it.
The docking one, is that what you're talking about?
I think so. Don't quote me on that, but I seen that it definitely, even though Motorola promised for so long, it's definitely staying at 1.5. Now, how the heck do you feel when you're hearing about 3.0, 2.3, 2.2? How do you feel way, way down there at 1.5? It
Troy?
Just doesn't. It just doesn't look good from Android.
That was the Click XT, which came out shortly
XT,
after the Click.
Thank you.
Yeah. And for that phone, at that point, this is an entry-level Android smartphone. And it, you have to make sure that before you buy it, it does everything that you want it to do, because there's no shot at, you know, getting Google Goggles or Adobe Reader on there. It's just not going to happen. And it's just, you know, once again, shows that the classiness of Motorola scumbags that they are.
See, this is the converse element of Apple versus Google, because if you've got an iPhone 3, then or certainly an iPhone 2.0, you know, the first version, the first gen iPhone, you really want your operating system to stay at 2.1. You don't want an upgrade, and yet they keep badging you for an upgrade, and you're almost forced into having the upgrade, and it turns your phone into an absolute slug. And yet, with Android, everyone's begging for the upgrades and no one's getting them. Is that a good thing? Are they holding you back from the sluggish phone because it can't deal with the upgrade? Or are they just shafting you?
For want of a better word. In most cases, the manufacturers who are putting their own stuff into Android are not keeping up to date with it.
It's the overlay. That's the problem. I mean, with Apple, you've got, you know, the wall of garden thing. This is how they wanted it. That's how it is. It goes on one device. Yeah, it's much, much more complicated. I mean, you've got, and I really firmly believe a lot of the problem is with these companies doing their own little, we got our own little special overlay and it's going to be great. There's nothing wrong with the vanilla version of Android. In fact, it's
Absolutely.
The best version.
Yeah, huh? Sure is.
Amen to that.
Yeah. And
yeah, I agree with both of those
Google
points. They hold it up
that.
Because of that.
Why
there's no
Google
reason
just
to
do that.
So go again. What you say about...
Oh, I said I agree with both of what you said, both points, Troy, that there is no reason to feel the need to put their own skin, their own user interface over what Android gives you. at least from a user's perspective, from a business perspective, they think that's what's going to differentiate their product from the competitors. But then users just get angry because it causes huge delays up to a year or more in many cases. A lot of phones out there still haven't gotten their 2.2 version. I think one thing, though, I think you had asked, is it a performance issue? I suspect it's not, just because we're seeing a lot of the hot new phones running, I think even some of the dual cores, maybe not, but some of the brand new phones that haven't even hit the market yet are coming out with 2.2. And they're faster than the ones on the market. I guess it's just one or two devices right now that can actually run 2.3. They have better specs, and they're not doing that. So it's weird, but I do think it's a gigantic marketing failure.
But again, is that the research element of the fact that, you know, Android is this framework that people hang things off? It's a clothesline for drivers and features. And when they were in development, you know, 2.3 comes out, well, hell, we spent all this time doing 2.2. We might as well just reach it with 2.2, because we've got another, you know, 3 months of writing the upgrade stuff to hit 2.3. Or does it transfer far easier than that? I'm being kind to them.
Well, then, you know, what you get also is you start making your customers even more angry, because people start clamoring, where's my 2.3 upgrade? And the manufacturer sitting back there saying, well, even when we give them that, we're still going to cut off the hotspot feature. We're still going to cut off all these features that were added. We're going to cut away the VoIP feature. We're going to do all this stuff that is demanded by AT&T or Sprint or whoever is making the phone, or whoever is carrying the phone. So much of that manufacturer customization, unfortunately, is to strip the phone of its native features that the hardware and the Android operating system can support at the request of the carriers. Talk about fragmentation. You've got then people looking at the same version of the operating system, let's say 2.2, and it's wildly different in features from one phone to another. The version hardly means anything to consumers.
Only solution is our wonderful modding community to give us a nice vanilla custom ROM for each handset. That is the workaround around the carriers, around the manufacturers, all that garbage. It's our wonderful modding community. So tip of the cap to those folks.
So you're just breeding hacking.
Unfortunately, though. Sorry, Ewan, go ahead.
So you're just breeding hacking. By not giving the people what they want, you're breeding a hacking community.
Exactly.
Sorry, Carl, go ahead.
No, I was going to say, but unfortunately, I agree with everything Troy says there. More power to them. It's like jailbreaking, but unfortunately, your warranty's gone in the process, and that's not exactly fair just so I can get a native Android experience the way it's actually supposed to be. Google needs to get a hand on this operating system. I think what happened, they sit here and said, oh, look at Apple over there. Look how well they're doing. We got to do something. We got to do something just as good. We got to do it better. And what happened is they didn't think long-term about it. I really think Google needs to take an Apple approach. They need to get some control over their OS and sit there and say, look, carriers, you can't do this.
Yeah.
We've got customers pissed off that one guy's at 1.5. We got another one at 2.2. We got another guy that bought literally almost the same Samsung phone. I can get a Nexus S at 2.3, but I can't get a Galaxy to get to 2.2. It's ridiculous.
Yeah.
And there's no reason why, Google can keep Android open and free and fun as it is, but you're right, Kyle. They need to get some control, and a little control is okay.
I mean, it's the thing that strikes me is it's very much like, I think, AT&T. You know, AT&T signed up very early to the iPhone, thinking they were going to have something that was going to be fantastic and expand their business. And what they ended up with was something that was effectively a lead weight around their neck. Yes, they made a lot of money from it, but it strained their infrastructure to the breaking point. And also, you know, they were forced to reinvest in their infrastructure like tenfold of what they probably expected. With Android, they've produced an operating system, thrown it out there, and I think it's probably been a bit more of a success than they actually anticipated it would be.
Quite possible. I mean, as I said, I don't think Google anticipated that to really happen or take off maybe this quickly before they got all the kinks or had any division how actually the thing is supposed to be distributed amongst manufacturers. As far as the AT&T deal goes, it's at a point we actually have to thank Apple, because if Apple not put that phone in AT&T's pocket, God only knows what kind of network infrastructure AT&T would have for people right now. It actually made AT&T invest and make a better network, which probably actually helped in turn with the deal with Verizon and AT&T. Now, it also makes service better for AT&T customers. You've got competition now, which is probably the best thing to happen for the iPhone.
And now 50% of their customer base is potentially walking away with the Verizon iPhone.
I think that's high. I think that's high. I think 50% is way too high. How many people are still under contract that just got an iPhone 4 just, you know, 8 months ago? I can't see them leaving yet.
Yeah, I think the number I heard was like 80% of people are on AT&T contract. 80% of iPhone customers are under contract with AT&T for at least another year. Don't quote me on that, but I think it was really high. It was something like 80%.
Yeah, it's a lot. That's an awful
lot. It would make sense because the iPhone 4 is fairly a fresh phone right now, and which is, you know, it would make no sense right now to switch over to Verizon. Wait till the new one comes out, the CDMA version for Verizon. You're done with your AT&T contract, then switch if you think it's fitting for you.
No, I didn't think about the early settlements, because the one thing that AT&T did do was absolutely pin people on the early settlements. They were talking about $350 charges just to buy yourself out of even a month of contract. It was they were really, really stitching people up for them.
Well, you know what's weird is that speaking of bowing to the demands of carriers and doing things that really harm the consumers, both AT&T and Verizon in recent months have taken measures to prevent people from upgrading to buying a new phone sooner than the 2-year window. They both used to offer a deal that lets you get a discount on if you were a year into the contract. Hmm. And I remember reading that they both now have stripped that away, especially AT&T in regards to iPhones, which is weird. I mean, I would think that Apple and the other manufacturers would just be screaming at them, don't do this. We want people to buy a phone on the yearly upgrade cycle. It benefits users so much more than, you know, when you had just a feature phone, you could wait 2 years. Nothing changed about it. Maybe the screen got a little bit better. That was it. But now, I mean, the difference between a Retina display and not, or video camera and not, I mean, the differences today are so huge. People want that hardware. They want to upgrade at least as quickly as they do with a computer. It's a weird move, and it's got to frustrate both users and the device manufacturers.
Absolutely.
And especially Android users.
I think at some point they're going to have to do something about the 2-year contract, because the way technology is moving, 2 years is way, way too long.
I mean, the phone market's always been a very complicated environment, hasn't it? I mean, you've always had issues over which data plans do I go for, which call plans do I go for, which text plans do I go for. And then to start putting in schisms over operating systems and potential upgrade issues, they were already there. And now with the separation for tablets, you know, that two-paired route, when you look at webOS potentially coming next week, WebOS is definitely harping on a lot of the pre-hype stuff is all about this unification process of the operating system, the unification of the device integration. It's not about going into separations of the two. iOS is all about unification. WebOS is about unification. And Google Android has suddenly taken this path of opposition almost.
You're referring to unifying the operating system with the hardware?
Yeah, you look at the WebOS and that kind of stuff, they're just talking about WebOS. Now, there may be subtle variations between that and the tablet that aren't any different from what Google are doing in terms of Android. But in terms of your marketing element, you're talking about one OS all the time with WebOS and with iOS. Now you're talking about two operating systems as a subdivision of a single operating system. You've got Android, and then, oh, there's Android flavor A and Android flavor B. Well, at that point, the customer's just sitting looking and go, well, which one do I need? When actually, they don't get
exactly.
A choice.
As soon as you're telling the consumer that version 2.8 is newer than version 3.5, you've pulled a Microsoft.
Yeah, exactly.
Mm. Huh. Yeah.
Funny you mentioned Microsoft. Did you see that Microsoft stealing from Google this week?
Yes. Well, they vehemently denied that, haven't they?
Yeah, right.
We're not actually doing it.
Yeah, right.
They did. They have like a... You know, there were so many updates and update number two, update number three. I'm not sure I've totally caught up on them all across these various news sites. But at somewhere along the lines, Microsoft released an unequivocal statement that we do not copy Google. We simply don't, or something along those lines, which is, I think, silly, because Google clearly demonstrated that they do scrape their search results to provide results in the absence of results from their own algorithm. And I agree with Google that that does seem like cheating. That's unprecedented. That is very much like looking over at the guy's paper next to you during an exam. Mm. Google's search results are supposed to be based on an algorithm. It's supposed to be your own proprietary technology, and you're not supposed to just steal the results from other search engines.
But can they really react that quickly?
Well, we know how
correct me or fill me in on what the exact details were, because there was something that they were doing that was something in the Internet Explorer license agreement that was sending everything that they typed and clicked on through google.com or that search bar to Microsoft, I think. Isn't that right?
Yeah,
something along those lines. Yeah.
They kind of reckon they'd gotten by the short and curlies. They knew they were doing it.
Yeah, and then a typical Microsoft to come out and say, no, we're not, you know. It's a typical Steve Ballmer effect, as I always say, you know, kind of like, no, we're not doing it.
So, I mean, we're just talking here as consumers. We have no proof either way, and we're not suggesting for one second that we know the answer to this. But in your gut, in your heart of hearts, were they doing it? Eric?
wait, I'm confused. I thought Google's test showed that they absolutely were doing it. I believe them when they say that it's just a first step. It's just a starting point, and that as soon as they get better data generated from their own algorithm, they cease using Google's exact data. But I think Google's their sting operation, I think showed that pretty conclusively.
That's like me saying, until I can take better pictures, I'm going to steal someone else's.
Exactly.
I'm going to go on Google Images and I'm going to take some pictures that someone else took and pass them off as my own. But it's okay. No, don't get me wrong. I'm not stealing, because when I'm better as a photographer, I'm going to take better pictures and I'll post those as mine. But until then, I'm going to steal someone else's. No?
That's exactly right.
Until I can work out how to write an algorithm to do search engine technology, I'm still going to release a search engine technology that then doesn't really work unless I go and steal what you do.
I can see the story headline next week. Windows Phone 7 is actually Android underneath.
Oh, that could be truer than you know. Holy hell.
The one thing I would say about it is that, you know, Bing's come up fairly quickly. Google have been doing this for years. So you kind of think, maybe there's a bit of an inside track here that Microsoft have been using something. It just seems odd that they should get up to speed so quickly.
You got to believe it.
Well, and one website pointed out that now with Yahoo just running their searches through Bing, we're basically down to two search engines for everyone that's on the internet. You know, that's kind of scary that there's that little competition, and now one is stealing from the other. It's like we're really just using one search engine.
Yeah.
Yeah. No. The interesting thing would be who Yahoo's shoving in the back. Because if they're tied in with Bing,
I don't know. Start our own search engine. Call it Bingle.
Bingle.
I don't know. Bagel search sounds good to me.
Bagel search. Yeah, but it'd be crap.
Lugal.
Canada has got quite a few problems with the internet this week. They're talking about metered billing going on over there. First it was, then it wasn't. And then the guy that's the regulator, who's allegedly been held up as being completely crap and ineffective, has said, well, okay, it's not going to come now because the guy that's above me said it's not going to come now, but it's coming. Brace yourself. Do we want metered billing on the internet? Really?
Hell no.
Hell no.
Now, this is ridiculous.
We had Chris Dick
on
this
morning.
Here
we go, once again, yeah.
Canadian photographer. Go ahead.
Yeah, yeah.
Chris Dick came on the photo show, and we're like, Chris, so do you want to talk about it? No, I don't want to talk about it. So what's the, do you want to watch the feedback so you can see the new video setup? No, because if I put it in, I get like this video feed that loops around and around, and I can't watch what I'm streaming to because there's something going on with the local network. Rogers has got the place tied up pretty badly. And it's kind of almost like a closed shop over there.
Mm. Seems that way. Rogers is Kim Jong-il.
I mean, we complained about lack of competition a few weeks back, Eric, and you said the C word for Comcast. And
don't say it. My connection will drop.
They probably cut you off, yeah, with their algorithm. But I mean,
you know,
just say something positive. You'd be all right, Eric.
Comcast are great. But Rogers.
It's Comcastic.
the Canada situation is do Americans perceive the Canada situation as worse or better?
I'm sorry, say the last thing again.
Do the Americans perceive? I mean, you were complaining about the competition issues in the American market, but do you look at Canada and think, well, okay, but hell, you know, we're not as bad as they are.
Actually, yeah. From what I've read, I'm not entirely sure, because while they do have mandatory line sharing, and that's what has come under scrutiny now, is because it looks like at least one of their biggest providers will basically charge the little guys out of existence, the ones who are legally mandated to piggyback on their network by this metered billing. But somehow, despite having mandatory line sharing, which we completely lack in the United States, we have no line sharing at all anymore, they still have higher bandwidth prices. The interesting thing about metered usage-based billing on the internet is, in theory, it would be better for users. In theory, it would be, you know, let's suppose everyone paid $50 a month for internet service. In theory, your grandmother who uses, you know, 2 megabytes a day would be paying $3 a month. And you, a gamer, a torrenter, you know, your Mr. Internet Connection, you'd be paying maybe 60 or 70. And it would totally work itself out, because the people who use it more pay a little bit more, and the people who use it less pay a lot less. But we know they're not doing that, because they would never do this to make less money. That's what you have to remember. The only reason that these ISPs want to change this is to make more money by overcharging you extensively for those gigabytes.
That's a good point. I must admit, I was starting to think, well, okay, if we start seeing the internet as a utility, lots of other utilities are the same way. It's effectively metered. So one day, why wouldn't we be in that situation?
Yeah, but the problem that you've got there is that the actual volume of the data that you take down is the only defense that you currently have of stopping them from charging you that metered volume at peak volumes. So whilst you've got this ability to say, right, if you take down 30 gigabytes a month, you're going to pay this much, and if you take down 20 gigabytes a month, you're going to pay this much, and, you know, 20 gigs less than 30 gig. That's all well and good, and I agree with that idea in principle, and I agree with you, Sarah, that that's a good utility discipline. However, the problem that you've got is, if you take this 30 gigabytes down and you take it down during peak periods, I'm not going to charge you the 30 gigabyte rate. I'm going to charge you the 30 gigabyte rate plus 20%, plus 40%. And that's what's coming next, because the only thing that's holding it back is the absence of metered billing. Once metered billing comes in, then you've got the issue of the fact that people will then start to tailor the metered billing to fit peak periods. So it's like your electricity. You take your electricity between 3 a.m. and 7 a.m., you pay next to nothing for it. You take it between 7 a.m. and 9 a.m., you'll pay three times as much between 7 and 9 for the same amount of electricity that you use between 3 and 7.
Yeah, that's how the principles of storage heaters used to work, wasn't it?
Exactly, yeah.
Which effectively kills folks like Netflix, who compete with the cable companies, who more often than not are your ISP.
Exactly.
But I think there is a slight comparison, and I don't know what the situation is in the Philippines or the US, but you know what I mean. With water over here, there's this thing about the water companies are trying to get everybody to be metered. But it's obviously, if you're a heavy user of water, you don't want to do it, quite understandably. But there is a sort of similarity.
Hoomsker in the chat room's gone, we're all wrong. So why are we all wrong then, mate? You tell us.
It's like, can you elaborate, sir?
Yeah, exactly. Bull! Okay, why?
Don't you just miss the days of dial-up where we all got that crappy 48 kilobytes per second, and you know, we paid 10, 15 bucks a month, and nobody was saying anything to us. All this is, ultimately, in the end, do you use a lot of the internet? Well, I tell you what, if you don't want to be paying that per gig, whatever you go over, we've got this nice little package over here for you. Now, yes, it is about 60% more than you pay per month now, but think of the benefits. If you're a heavy streamer, if you torrent, if you're a heavy gamer, we've got you covered. We are Comcastic.
But I think look at it from a logical viewpoint. If you look at the FCC and their job of protecting the public, is part of that job looking further down the road and saying, look, if we let this point come in, and this is whether it's FCC UK, FCC America, or FCC Canada, if we let this come in, then what we're opening up is this ability for the providers to make deals which are so complex that no one can understand them. And once you let them into that, and that's what you're in with the cell phone market, it is a wild west out there. And I could walk into Orange tomorrow and say, you know, I'm on open contract from O2. I've got my iPhone 4. I don't need another phone. I just want to transfer over. Give me a simple package whereby you can give me amount of minutes and amount of data and amount of texts, and we'll talk business. And by the time the guy has finished talking to me for 10 to 20 minutes, I would probably walk out of there far more confused than I walked in. And I didn't even want a cell phone, and I didn't want a new number. And therein lies the problem.
Can I just make a link here? This is very interesting. When you think about the story we talked about privacy, if this was to happen, we could end up paying for stuff that we didn't actually want.
I think that's just a modus operandi of the technology market, isn't it?
Yeah, but...
I got a shitload of Apple products that I can't use.
Spam emails.
Edit.
I did will for the saying that word this afternoon. I do apologize. Yes.
Oh, yeah.
No,
It's interesting. I think the problems that we have with the telcos in general, whether we're talking ISPs, cable, or cellular phones, is that in many cases, these were monopolies or partial monopolies that were government granted because they were companies that were able to build out a physical infrastructure, right? They knew how to lay fiber. They knew how to construct towers. They knew how to string cables and go into people's houses to finish just setting it up. They had their network of contractors and so forth. And yet the thing that they don't understand is the actual technology. I guess what I'm getting at is it's hard to make that landscape suddenly more competitive. It's hard to just suddenly come up with entrepreneurs who will ride in on white horses with better ideas, because they could now, but I is what I'm saying making any sense at all? That it's like the people who were there because they could build the physical things, and now we need them to cooperate with us, the users, on more of a software level, and they aren't willing to do that.
No, I get you. I think that's the American model, is the fact that you let people lay down tracks for a railroad so that they could run their trains down that railroad. But then at a certain point, everyone's got to stop saying, well, you know, can we let someone else use the railroad tracks? You know, we'll pay your rent. It's not a problem. But, you know, let someone else use it. And they're all going, no. That's our route. That's ours.
You give them exclusivity for a certain period of time.
Yeah, you get that hold over it, and then you have to let it go at some point. And we've got that here in the UK, which is good. You know, BT were deregulated, and they have to let the lines out to other people. And we've got a great competition now. You know, there's some fantastic deals out there for 20 gig Ethernet service or broadband service. Good conversations, chaps. Have we got any cool thingies? Eric, have you got a cool thingy for us?
Sure. Well, I gave away my best two this morning on the Mac show. So if you're curious, check out those again. I had Boom was the volume, you know, booster volume on your like a MacBook Air, any Mac. And then I had the iPad joystick, the Fling. But just in the interest of something new, I'm going to pick the Cisco router. I just bought this new router because my old one, ever since its firmware update, gave out, and I couldn't revert to the old firmware because I needed the features that it added. And it was just not working that well. It was getting very slow performance and things. So think of it this sort of as a meta review, because I read a bunch of reviews before I bought this. It's the Linksys E4200, so E4200 from Linksys, also known as Cisco. I got $150 on sale. It's not even really out on the market yet. It's that new. They have some really brand new technologies, super fast wireless in and A and G, and it's got all these special features. And I had the whole thing set up and super customized over the web interface within about 5 minutes, not even using their wizard or anything. And what really seals the deal for this is that when you look at, I looked at CNET, I looked at PCMag, I looked at some other review sites about the speed of the router. And this is one of the fastest. I think it's like the only one that beats this was the older Linksys, who lacked a bunch of other features that this had. So Linksys E4200 router is a really good router. That's almost not even out yet, but so that is my cool thingy.
Excellent. Price?
$150 on sale, otherwise $180.
So look for the sales.
Yeah.
Jeez, $30. Yeah, I'll take that. Good one. If you stick a link in the docs for us, we'll shove it into the sure. newsletter. Sarah, your cool thingy, please.
I haven't got one. Sorry, Ewan.
Oh, that's all right, because you're ill. I noticed you put your sick voice on to say that, so I'd feel
no,
sorry for
sorry.
You.
No, sorry. Didn't mean to.
All right, mate. No worries.
NyQuil.
NyQuil. Yeah, NyQuil. Your pick is NyQuil.
Yeah, I was going to say.
But we can't buy it here in the UK. It's Night Nurse, then. Kyle, your cool thingy, please, mate.
Yeah. It's, you know, we've been playing with Synergy and all these kind of things over the past, you know, couple of weeks. I know that you liked Teleport for the Mac.
Oh, no, you can...
No. It's not Teleport. It's not Teleport.
It's coming true.
It's something that I actually just stumbled upon because of these things. It's called Maxi Vista. And essentially what it does, it turns your... like a laptop or just another monitor that you have with that's attached to an old PC or whatever, it can essentially turn it into basically a spare monitor. Now, this is Windows only, but it works through, you got to have it on your home network, so on the same network, and you install one piece of software on your Windows machine, and then on the other Windows machine, you'll install the receiving end. And essentially what it does, it just gives you an extra screen on your desktop. I have an old laptop, and I was thinking, I don't use the thing much anymore, and I can actually have an additional monitor with this.
How does it run in terms of slickness, though? Because the one thing that you've got with the iPad when you use it as an extra monitor is it's not kind of there, you know? It's a bit kludgy.
This actually works pretty well. Now, I wouldn't recommend it to, you know, move over video unless you're... you say your old laptop can handle it, because it kind of uses the power of whatever device you're using. But if you just need an extra window there to move some stuff across and have it there, TweetDeck or something open there, it works fantastic for that. And it really does feel like almost real time. There's not much lag when you move from screen to screen to screen. The only thing I have to say about it, they have a free trial. I think it's 14 days or 50 startups. It's not exactly cheap. It's like $40. But to me, when I was sitting there, like, it's like, hey, might as well just get another monitor. But if you have an old laptop or something and you're not using it for anything and you need an additional monitor and it works really, really well for that.
Yeah, I like that. It's a great pick. Troy, have you got? Are you doing an Android app this week? Or
close. Very close.
Close, but not quite.
Yeah. My pick this week is the Android Market, which is now available on the web, and it's amazing. So if you go to market.android.com, there you can browse through all the apps that are available in the market. You can see the reviews. You can see some larger screenshots. You can tweet it out to your friends and email links to people, whether it be on their computer or on their phone. The nice thing is that if you tweet a link out and someone catches it on their phone, the link will take them to the marketplace, not the web store on their phone. So it's just a really nice move from Google to make all the apps more accessible.
Now, you've had the marketplace go live this week, of course, as well. Is it free?
Yeah.
Good. We're going to keep them free, because I mean, the thing is now that the marketplace coming on means it's a whole load more like the App Store, and you're going to be giving us prices for your Android apps, mate, or you're going to stick with the free market?
I have to say I like the free stuff. There's a lot of good free stuff out there.
Don't we all, mate?
Yeah. Why pay for it when you can get it for free? Come on.
I couldn't agree more. Absolutely. My pick, as Kyle outed me on, is Teleport. It's a fantastic little application that's free of charge. And they've also got a sharing system for sound files as well. The Teleport is kind of like Synergy, except it's one click to set it up instead of all the crap that goes with Synergy and all the different distros of it with KVM versions and that kind of stuff. Teleport's a single application, and you can use the single mouse and keyboard across any Macs that are there. It's all Mac. You can lay them out how you want, whether it's linear or whether in a cube or that kind of stuff. And the three monitors here behind me are all run off a single mouse. And there you go, Eric's has just blipped because I've lifted it up. And they're all run off Teleport. And even me, who is the coding numpty, managed to set it up. Because the one that requires a bit of coding is I'm stupid. There we go. So I can't issue an excuse for myself any longer. I'm just not up to it. And I've got to say, though, in my defence, Diddle Dan came on the Skype wall last week with James and sat for over an hour trying to help us to get Synergy to work, and it would not work. And he knows what he's talking about. Or at least he told us he knew what he was talking about. I have no evidence to prove that he knows what he's talking about, though, at this point, because it didn't work, Dan. Teleport. It's at abyssoft.com/teleport. There we go. /software/teleport. Do apologise. But we're going to do, and it won't be this week, but I think it's going to be next week. Well, we might do it this week, but you won't be able to get it till next week. We're going to do a newsletter, which you can subscribe to through the website. You need to give us your email address, awfully sorry, otherwise you won't get it. Or you can subscribe to an RSS feed. And each week, Troy will send you an email which has got all of the stuff in it from all of the shows with all of the links to all of the stories and any of the blog posts that we've written or something like that, perhaps. It's a cut-and-paste thing, I hope. I don't think it's going to be too much trouble for Troy. I hope it's not, because he works hard enough as it is. But it might not be this week, it might be next week, but there will be something coming. It's when Sarah feels better and she can put the link on the website.
Yeah.
We're not going to press you though, mate. Don't worry.
I know.
Last word, of course, goes to our sponsors, UK2.net. You can see them on the left of all the guys there in the video. We keep saying to you guys, you know, please click on the links and that kind of stuff. But it is essential, because without these guys, we would not exist at all. We consumed just shy of a terabyte last month in nothing but audio across all the shows on the podcast. Kyle's pointing there on the video. UK2.net, give them a try. There's a link on our website at bageltechnews.com. Click on the link, it'll take you through. UK2 will know that we've sent you, and just the more people that click that link, the more that UK2 are going to trust the fact that we're driving people towards them and hopefully giving them business. When we get them there, it's down to them to sell the products to you. It's not down to us, but we can sell you them, and we deal with their tech support, you know, regularly, and they do look after us very well. Craig down there gives us a fantastic support, and we're looking at ways of marketing ourselves jointly going forwards, because they're happy to be with us and we're happy to be with them. So UK2.net, click them through if you want to keep us free and on air, because without them we're stuffed. Where can we get a hold of you, Eric?
EricLanigan.com and twitter.com/EricLanigan, EricLanigan.
As spelt on the video, if you've got copies of the video. The video's been quite smooth tonight as well, so I'm hoping that we might be able to push this out on iTunes as a video. We'll have to wait and see. Sarah, where can we get a hold of you?
You can get a hold of me at my website, which is sarahjaneuk.com, or on Twitter at sarahjaneuk.
Jolly good. Kyle?
On Twitter at Kyle Swagger, or kyleswagger.com, that is, or you can bingle me.
Mingle you?
Bingle. Yeah.
Bingle, sorry. And Troy, bingle. Finally.
I'm also on Twitter, of course, at the Troy King. And I'm currently doing a little bit of rehashing on my personal website, thetroyking.com, where you can find links to my Twitter page and my two shows, Bagel Tech Rage and Bagel Tech Droid.
Is there a fake Troy King? If you're the Troy King.
Well, I'm working on exterminating that problem.
You're going to buy it off him for
you're
a million.
You're going to buy it off him
for a million. He's squatting on your Twitter name.
I had this problem with Gmail.
Someone squatted on Sarah Jane.
Yeah, Sarah Jane UK. I couldn't get sarahjaneuk@gmail.com.
There you go. You're a bit
I think,
obtuse.
I think Graceland's going to be calling Troy and saying, excuse me, there's only one king, boy.
On that note, we'll see you again next week, as normal. We've got the Daily Show every day next week. I need to ask Carl if he can do a couple of days for me, though, because I've got a lot of work. And we've got the Media Show twice weekly, and we've got the Rage Show twice weekly. The Droid Show's in there as well with Troy. And also we've got Broadcast Friday, Bagel Friday, where we've got the Photo Show at 11, the Mac Show at 1, the Media Show at 3, and then the Bagel Tech Show at 10. So join us all the next week. Have a good weekend. Thanks for listening.